Micah McAllister is one of the board members for the foundation, and I believe this is your third year as a board member. Oh, five.
Third year as a board member.
Oh, as a board member, yeah. Yeah, he was coming to the conference long before he was a board member. He's done a lot of study and reading about his subject today, and I'm going to let him explain it. And so without any other waste of time, we will turn the time to Micah.
It's good to be here. And nerve-wracking. All right. So I left the church in 2008 and found myself here 5 years ago that same year. Was anybody else here that year? Raise a hand. A few of you? Okay, good. I knew I recognized some of you from at least some past years, maybe going back that far. So that first conference that I was here really stirred my passion for this community. It was my first experience really being around a whole bunch of ex-Mormons. And so right after that conference, I started my website. Will you go ahead? Next slide. LifeAfterMormonism.net, which is a social network platform. And I became really involved mostly at that point, or even some on that point on RFM, but after that it became more on post-Mormon and my website, and then also Facebook some. And I became aware of all of the common themes and challenges that most of us face in leaving the church, and looking at the pitfalls and things we can, the best ways to kind of manage those. And then about a year ago, I started compiling all of that collected knowledge into a study guide, and it's called The Exit Strategy, A Guide to Leaving Mormonism with Your Dignity, Integrity, Intact. And you can get that book on Amazon, Kindle, or you can read it for free on my website, which if you look in your orange folder there, it's got the link in there. So you can read that for free, and there's a lot of good stuff in there, suggestions and so forth, so that you can navigate whatever part of the transition you're going through right now, talking or coming out to family or family relationships or getting over guilt and other hang-ups from Mormonism. My presentation today will contain the essence of what's in my exit strategy guide, but it's going to be more of a focused format on relationships and relationships with others as well as ourselves. And the most common challenge that I've seen and reoccurring in all of our exits is dealing with our believing family members. Raise your hands, who all has relationship problems with believing family members or believing anybody? Yeah, see, it's pretty common. And about a month ago, I sort of probed the ex-Mormon community and asked that question, and that was definitely 9 times out of 10 the problem that most people were experiencing. And that is a constant challenge, regardless of how your personal healing for Mormonism is gotten or reached. For my day job, I am a technical analyst or a problem solver in computer software and tech support kind of stuff, basically. And to really get to the root of a problem, you have to identify the root cause, and otherwise you're not going to really solve the problem. You're just going to band-aid it or cover it up or try ignore it. And in all of our relationships with others, we are half of the equation. We only own our half of the equation, but what we bring into a relationship can make or break it. But there's another important relationship in the mix, and that is our relationship with ourselves. And our relationship with others will reflect the health of our relationship with ourselves. To present the best opportunities for healed relationships with others, we need to look at healing our relationship with ourselves. So in this presentation, we'll explore how our identity comes about through our relationship with ourselves and how that identity that we have creates our filters and affects the worldview of how we project and see the world around us as well as our relationships with others around us. And then we'll go into restoring relationships with others. Dude, this is going to happen. So You already know at this point that I'm going to probably cause some flashbacks to facet testimony meeting. So it's not the truth. It's not any symbolism of truth. I'm like, the spirit isn't working on me. It's just my own body responding to thought. I might master it someday. I might not. And also touch on, towards the end, I'll touch on deconversion efforts. How many of you have had problems trying to, like, expel the truth to others when had it backfire? Raise a hand. Yeah, I have too. So what I share today, I share from my heart, but I also want you guys to not just believe me outright. You test it, try it for yourself. And yeah, don't believe me outright. I mean, like, but I mean, it's good stuff, right? But I'm just trying to, like, get away from that mindset. I was going to say, don't interpret my emotions as evidence for anything other than my having a personal experience with my body's response to thought input, because that's what it is. It's not the Holy Ghost. Just a further disclaimer. So I share this presentation as my own opinions, and it's interpreted through my own language and thoughts and I experience with reality. So let's see what slide. I don't think we're on the next slide yet. Yeah, we're good right now. So let's get into a relationship with self. Is that how many of you have heard of a concept of relationship with self before? Raise of hands. Okay, good. So it's not too uncommon. Relationship with self is a lot like relationship with you would have with anybody else, except it's instead your relationship with through your thoughts to your internal identity or your internal subconscious. And it's how we talk to ourselves, it's how we think about ourselves, it's the beliefs we have both about ourselves and about how our place in the world. And yourself, or who you think you are, is the identity made up from all of the combined beliefs you currently maintain. Your identity is multifaceted and contains all of the beliefs of who you think you are, and that includes who you think you are to your parents, your siblings, your kids, your coworkers, everybody around you. And you have more or less a different kind of version of yourself for each of those people. And your identity is also completely imaginary. It's made up. It's all in your head. It doesn't have to match external reality. It doesn't have to match your physical appearance even. You can think you look like a rock star, but you may not get on stage that often. We create our identity consciously and subconsciously through our relationship with ourselves. And I'm going to go through a slide here of how more or less that happens. It's kind of a simplified version. Go ahead, next slide. So a thought about ourselves enters our conscious thinking, or it could even be somewhat not very conscious, because not every thought we're just consciously aware of. And it enters our thinking, and then it goes through our filters, which is our biases and beliefs, our past experiences, everything that we have combined. Let's see, is this... This was working earlier. I had a laser pointer that worked. Okay, well, never mind. All right, so let me just go over the slide real quick. So on the left side, we have our physical mind and body. That's like all of our nervous system, our receptors and such. So we get input from that into our thoughts through hearing people's our experiences and also through our own thoughts. So then our filters will go through that process of evaluating it and identifying it or not. And we have an emotional factor with that. And our emotions can very much influence whether we tilt one way or the other of agreeing with that thought or disagreeing with that thought. If we disagree, it just kind of gets thrown away or at least put on the shelf until it comes back to it. If there is an agreement made with that thought, though, it goes on to become a new belief, and that new belief can have various levels of being internalized into our identity. And the more internalized that belief becomes, usually is more how personal it is to you. And so that, if at the deepest level, you become a fanatic about that belief, but you have, there's other lighter levels that aren't quite that drastic. And then once you go through that and get that new belief, it updates your identity, it updates your perception of how you see the world, just like when a new convert joins Mormonism, now they see through different colored glasses. And it's our identity that actually maintains and creates the filter. So it's kind of it can be a feedback loop system, which is what emotions do in a lot, because they like tell us that those good feelings mean the church is true. And then we think, well, if what we're feeling is good, then it must mean what we're hearing is good, which means it must be true. And then it creates more good feelings, and then, yeah. Let's see where I got down to. All right, so this is all done pretty casually in our head. This is just kind of a way of visualizing what happens with our thoughts. Back to that side. So imagine our identity on the left is what we have, all of our beliefs about ourselves, how we think our appearances to others or to ourselves, our self-conscious insecurities and so forth, whether we think we're dumb or ugly or challenged or whatever. That's all under our imaginary identity and affects how we interact with others. It's important to note that it doesn't matter if the thought that we are considering is true or even agrees with reality. It can still be adopted into our identity and belief system. Subconscious programming happens much the same way, through suggesting it repeatedly the same ideas along with emotional reasoning and perceived evidence, such that without sufficient awareness, we give our power away to others to program us and basically get us to be who they want us to be. These internalized identity beliefs act like references or tapes that we replay in our heads when we're faced with an event or through our thought that arises to challenge our identity or who we think we are. And our identity, again, is the sum of all of our beliefs, which creates the filters again. And so the quality of our relationship with ourself is, I mean, that's the relationship with ourself right there. How well what we feed ourselves is what we are going to feel like inside and how we're going to also see others out on the outside. The beauty about this relationship imperative with ourselves is that it returns the focus to the real place of empowerment and control, and that is yourself. We don't have influence really of what others choose to do or want to do. We can physically manipulate or harm them with our strengths or whatever, or you can coerce them, but our influence with others is really not that great. Try to get your kids to clean up a mess that they don't want to clean up. You know you can't make them do that. So we can begin to understand a lot of our relationship struggles when we look at how Mormonism intervened with our relationship with self. Next slide. Most of my slides are just going to be like this, just kind of so you know what topic we're covering. So perhaps the most pernicious belief in Mormonism is that the natural man is an enemy to God. This belief reinforces that we are inherently evil, that our natural instincts and urges are at odds with who we should be or who God wants us to be. I'm going to try to keep my language clean, but that's pretty effed up. We are then enemies of ourselves, our own stumbling block for who we are told we should be. And we are then conditioned to heap judgment, guilt, shame, and so forth upon ourselves as we try to resist the natural man. And we struggle to become something that we aren't. The better that individual is at self-shaming, the more devastating the results of those misguided beliefs. Which is why you have various levels of how depressed or anxious or other psychological disorders that occur in the church. Some people just don't feel guilt, even if they're going against every commandment but still taking the sacrament. Those people are pretty damn lucky. when self-shaming isn't enough, the church will, and the sin is great enough, the church will then heap on greater levels of embarrassment, and such as revoking the sacrament, disfellowship, and ultimately excommunication. So all of the above creates an inner dialogue of how worthless we are, how sinful our nature, how weak, how ugly, or a world of other self-shaming, guilt-inducing failures that leave us basically hating who or what we are, or have been conditioned to believe that we can think we are. And since most of those natural urges are, the greatest sins are our natural urges, that is, like sexual nature or just regular body cravings, it makes it something that we never really overcome. We're always kind of in that cycle of indulgence, shaming, and repentance, and then it happens again, and you never really stop masturbating, or you never really stop feeling those, or feeling attraction to other people, even though you're told you shouldn't. And then besides all the ways that Mormonism conditions us to heap on guilt and shame, Mormonism also lacks any sort of teaching that would really help us have a healthy internal dialogue and create a healthy relationship with ourselves. So the only teaching that even gets close to that is the second commandment that Jesus kind of mentions in the New Testament of love thy neighbor as thyself. I've actually changed the wording of that in my head, so I often say it, love thyself as thy neighbor, because oftentimes we have a harder time loving ourselves than others. But love towards self is rarely expanded upon or mentioned further in Mormonism. All the focus seems to be instead on what you can do to show your love for others or show your love to God. We are basically told we have to go on missions, serve callings, go on home teaching, visiting teaching, and another endless list of expectations, and subsequently another list of failures, guilt, shame, or embarrassment. So there's nothing wrong with a genuine desire to serve others, but whenever that service becomes a detriment to yourself or your well-being, it has been taken too far and will begin to hurt yourself and trickle down to those that rely on your ability to serve them. So that makes Mormonism detrimental on those two fronts. Endless ways of self-loathing, and also lacking really any teachings that help us with our relationship with self. Anything that does seem to get through conference that's kind of self-empowering usually seems to come from Eastern philosophy and is often not even cited or sourced. And so it seems kind of inspired sometimes, but as soon as Packer gets up or as soon as Oaks gets up, that just kind of goes away and it didn't really do any good. Leaving Mormonism doesn't result in an automatic healing of our emotional wounds and our relationship with self, but it does remove us from the environment that did the most harm, and it leaves us open to self-discovery and self-acceptance, which can be the ultimate beginning of your profound healing. Western society also in general is not the greatest teacher of healthy relationships with ourselves. Having a lot of other methods of self-depreciation, competing, or otherwise promoting an ever-persistent feeling of lack or not being enough. Next slide. So we're going to go into restoring relationships with ourselves now. You cannot fully give to others what you do not have for yourself. Love cannot come from an empty well, neither can respect be established if none is had for yourself. The good news is that you have more control and influence with your relationship with self than you do with any other relationships. On healing your relationship with self is true self-empowerment, and also where your influence and control begins and extends from. By restoring a healthy relationship with yourself, you take your power back from others who would manipulate you, program you, or otherwise take advantage. Healing your relationship with self puts you back in the driver's seat of your life, and you begin to live life on your terms instead of on the terms others would have you live. Doesn't mean you'll be a narcissist or a hedonist, but you will seek out that which is for your greatest good and respectfully allow anything else to distance or fade away. I'm getting hot, so this is coming up. Oh, shoot, the microphone.
I'll just keep it on.
All More water then. Okay. Observing and controlling your thoughts is where you begin healing your relationship with self. Thanks. Some internalized beliefs from Mormonism fall away quickly once the precedent upon which they were established is no longer accepted. Other beliefs will take a more conscious effort of evaluation, observation, and replacement with new beliefs. Healing occurs as the old beliefs fade away and replaced with the new beliefs that provide a real foundation for healthy relationships with self and others. Focusing on what you want to create or become is usually more helpful than focusing on what you used to be or don't want to be. Once the new beliefs begin to take root, the old incompatible beliefs will begin to wither and disappear. Slide. All right. When negative, undesirable thoughts or programming crops up unexpectedly, it is important to respond to it in such a way that it is neither repressed nor reinforced. Non-judgment is key in preventing downward spirals by feeling bad, guilty, or inadequate when these patterns resurface. Patience with yourself is also essential. Healing takes time, and it is likely that these patterns will crop up time and time again, but they eventually get better. When any such undesirable thought, belief, or programming surfaces, consciously acknowledge them by simply being aware that they have surfaced and that you know that they are echoes from the past, and then repeat to yourself that you no longer agree with these beliefs, and then you can reaffirm the positive beliefs you want to replace it with. Also take note of whether there was any trigger in raising that pattern, and if you know the trigger, you can help avoid or anticipate the pattern being triggered, and which will provide further awareness of choosing a healthier response. If appropriate, devise how you'd rather respond when the pattern shows up, and then begin replacing the old pattern with the new thoughts, action, or inaction. And be gentle and patient with yourself, as it may require many attempts before the pattern fades completely and the new desired response becomes automatic. Next slide. All right, we're going to get into creating new beliefs that form a healthy relationship with yourself. New beliefs should be selected and worded carefully and then repeated to yourself in your head or out loud at regular intervals to begin the process of conscious self-programming. Keeping a written log of the beliefs you are striving to establish will help remember and track your response, or track your progress, sorry. You can also post reminders or written beliefs that you are likely to see during the day, such as on your bathroom mirror or your refrigerator. And it's best to work with a few focused beliefs at a time and not get overwhelmed by trying to do like a dozen. You may not feel the validity of the new or benefit of the new beliefs at first, but they will start to seep in and they will start to become part of your identity, and then you will feel that self-love and benefit come back. The old and healthy beliefs were not established in a day, and so these new beliefs will take a little time to make their mark. Usually a couple of weeks of repeating them daily will get that pattern going. That's about how long it takes to get a habit formed. And even after that point, once you've internalized it and are feeling much better about yourself, you can always replay those new belief tapes in your head to lift yourself back up, to tell yourself, pat yourself on the back, say, I love myself, or I am okay with myself. We're going to get into more specific beliefs here in a minute. So the beliefs that provide the greatest foundation for a healthy relationship with self involve the following attributes. Go ahead and slide. Love, respect, honesty, trust, ownership, gratitude, and friendship. So let's get into these attributes and how each of them kind of applies to yourself. Love is perhaps the most powerful and most sought-after sentiment humans crave, and the lack of love is also perhaps the most devastating starvation experienced after the lack of food, water, or air. as well as the cause of many other social ills. Unconditional love communicates self-worth, appreciation, and warmth regardless of the status of the one receiving it. Whether you currently feel loved or are worthy of love, love for self is perhaps one of the most worthwhile gifts you can give yourself. There is no one in the world more deserving of your love than you are. You can love yourself in thoughts, words, and action, just as you would towards a friend or a lover. A simple expression of love toward yourself is as follows. Next slide. I love and accept myself unconditionally just as I am. This is a... Sorry. That's a phrase I repeat to myself almost every morning. And it does make a difference. It makes a difference when you're the only one in your family that is out of the church and you never feel like they will ever accept you. But if you accept and love yourself, you don't have to feel that as often. You can also modify these statements to expand other things you want to love about yourself or want to love about yourself. Love about your looks or your talents. The surest way in the world to experience love is to be in love with yourself. When love is present, its companions, compassion, patience, and forgiveness are not far behind. And as you go forward in expressing love to yourself, the amount of love you experience and feel will grow and fill some of the deepest needs within your being. Okay, now we're going to go into respect for self. A respect for self is a recognition that you are an equal with everyone around you. Self-respect is also expressed through thought, words, and action. When you respect yourself, you establish your value as a human being who is worthy of being treated fairly and with dignity. And you establish that by treating yourself fairly and with dignity. Respect yourself as a unique individual with needs, wants, and dreams of your own that are valid and worthy of pursuing and obtaining. Respect that your life path is your own and that no one else will ever quite understand your path as well as you do. You can express respect to yourself in a number of ways similar to the following. Next slide. I respect myself as a unique individual with equal rights to pursue my happiness, wants, and needs. And this is coming out of Mormonism, this is an important one. Because Mormonism does not respect yourself. Your needs come last to those of their supposed God or their religion. You're expected to take those callings even if you're going to kill yourself doing it. Self-respect recognizes that your needs must also be met from time to time instead of being secondary to what others would demand of you. Self-respect also means not believing the lies we tell ourselves about how wounded we are, incapable we are, how unworthy, unloved, or other harmful beliefs that do nothing to our self-confidence or well-being. Just, you don't have to believe that stuff, when you're going through your head. And those beliefs are what keep us in abusive or unhealthy relationships because we identify with our suffering and unworthiness in such a way that we feel like we deserve to continue suffering or that we aren't worthy of real love and happiness. Sorry, facet testimony moment. For the most part, we only tolerate as much abuse from others as we heap upon ourselves. Can't see my paper. As you increase and restore self-respect, you will establish and maintain boundaries and no longer tolerate abuses. Next is gentle honesty, and I use the term gentle honesty because sometimes honesty can be pretty harsh, depending on how you word it to yourself. And gentle honesty is basically recognizing that you're human, you can make mistakes, and that it's okay. Gentle honesty is yourself with yourself is your reality check. Lying to yourself hurts no one more than yourself, keeping you trapped in expired paradigms, patterns, false beliefs, unhealthy living conditions, and other mental or physical traps that block you from going a new direction that would serve you better. Gentle honesty looks at reality as it appears before you in simple terms, rather than judgmental language that clouds our vision or heaps guilt or shame on us. You see yourself from a third party's perspective, full of compassion, and make evaluations of your circumstances in terms of what is working for you and what is not, what is healthy or unhealthy, helpful or harmful, positive or negative. You throw judgment to the side and avoid thinking in terms of good or bad, right or wrong, righteous or evil, or the many other labels we use to reinforce one bias or another. Next slide. Oh, you already got it up there. I am honest with myself because I am worthy of hearing my truth and taking care of myself, is one example of creating honesty with self. Your honesty helps you become aware of what triggers unexpected emotional changes in your mood and thinking patterns. Those triggers represent a past emotional wound that is yet unhealed or unresolved. Being honest with about those triggers and your default reaction to them can help you move forward, move towards forgiveness, self-love, and a new behavior in place of the programmed response. Gentle honesty with yourself recognizes that reality is not black and white, but shades of gray mixed with rainbows, with a lot of options to explore. All right, forgiveness for self. We all go through life and make mistakes. Even when we do our best with the information we have at hand, we can still err. We also carry emotional wounds from those mistakes and from the hurts others have inflicted upon us. It's important that we express compassion for ourselves through the self-loving gift of forgiveness. Is it up there? Next slide. I forgive myself from the mistakes of the past. That's just kind of a general affirmation, but you can change that to whatever particular hurt you're trying to get over. You can be as specific as needed in forgiving yourself for the wounds we carry and have allowed to be carried for so long. Forgiveness is a virtual letting go. You literally let go of the events, the wounds, the emotions that have caused so much suffering. Forgiveness is the healer's balm to dress your emotional wounds from the past until only the surface scars of memory remain and your emotional health restored. Forgive yourself for not knowing what could have saved you from the pain or suffering at the time you didn't know better. Forgiveness may not come all at once, but as you continue to grow in love and compassion, it comes easier and heals more fully. Practice forgiveness on small emotional wounds first, and then continue to every wound you encounter, big or small. And you will know when you are fully healed, as the triggers that used to stir your emotions will no longer have an effect on you. You have released them fully as you live in compassion and love with yourself and the world around you. Unconditional love now flows ever more naturally when you forgive yourself and no longer feel a need to suffer or loathe yourself for past mistakes or hurts. You can demonstrate patience and compassion by being gentle with yourself as you transition and grow while still experiencing some of the echoes of the past. Moving on to trust yourself. Trusting is another important aspect of healing your relationship with self. It can be hard to trust ourselves after leaving Mormonism because we recognize that we were duped and that is how easy it is to be misled or manipulated. It helps to remind yourself that hindsight is 20/20, whereas at the time you navigated those decisions, you had less experience and knowledge than you now have, and likely did the best you could with the information you then had, along with the beliefs and biases also held. Trust that you are now even doing your best with the best you can with what you know and have in front of you, what you are going through right now in life. All we can do is our best, and our best is not a constant. We have up days and down days, and what is an acceptable aspect, and that is an acceptable aspect of the flux of life. We can restore trust by basing our decisions off of measurable risks and benefits rather than irrational emotions of desire, fear, and judgment. Trust your abilities in those areas where you are skilled trust the decisions that aren't always black and white, and more than one alternative may work out in the end. Let's see where we're at. Yep. I trust myself to do the best I can as I follow what makes sense to my own logic and reason. Restoring trust with yourself will help restore confidence and allow you to move forward in the best way you know how. Mistakes are opportunities for learning and not to be feared. Remember that your unique individual self has its own logic and reason and understanding, and only you can choose to live in a way that honors yourself and creates the fulfillment and happiness that you desire. Ownership of self. Ownership is key to self-empowerment and restoring you to a place of decision and control. When you own something, you take responsibility for what becomes of it. You recognize any part that you played in the decision and events throughout your life and take responsibility for those parts. And you also let others own the parts that they were responsible for. Ownership and responsibility place you as the ultimate force for action and decision in your life. The opposite of ownership is victim identity, and victim identity renders the feeling of life being too cruel or too hard to be worth much effort of overcoming or moving on to things that you may really want in life. You identify with life being something that happens to you, rather than life being something you have or have some influence over. Victim identity includes decision, doubt, fear, and hopelessness. To be clear, the actions and decisions of others do have very real influence over our lives and can injure or traumatize us in very real ways with definite consequences out of no fault or control of our own. Ownership and responsibility don't dismiss those very real hurts. Instead, they determine to not let those hurts define you. You don't take ownership for what others have done to you. Instead, you restore your power to choose now and move forward rather than remaining trapped by your past. Own how your words and actions and decisions can influence others to hurt or to lift them. Own your triumphs along with your mistakes. Owning your mistakes means making an effort to learn from them as necessary, apologize or make restitution. Ownership embodies strength, courage, integrity, and resolve. Ownership embodies love, whereas dismissal embodies fear. I own and take responsibility. Let's see. Yeah. I want to take responsibility for my life as I do the best I can with the knowledge and the understanding I have. I own my mistakes as I learn from them, and I take what I have learned and go forward with more resolve. Ownership is also owning your feelings, emotions, and happiness. You don't look to others to make you happy or fulfill you. You don't hold your happiness contingent of others meeting your expectations or joining you on the same life path. That is what Mormonism embodies. To constantly challenge and hold your happiness hostage to everyone joining you in the same perfect vision of families forever. That is letting others have power over your happiness, and take responsibility for your happiness and own what thoughts you allow to occupy your mind and influence your emotions. Ownership will help you restore confidence, honor, and empowerment in your life. Life will become more what you can do with it than what life does to you. We're getting through these. Are we on time? Okay. All right. Gratitude can be a quick way of altering your life perspective and bring about optimism and appreciation. It's a great way to alleviate feelings of depression or anxiety. It can help you refocus on what is working in your life and those things that really do bless and lift you. Even when there may not appear to be much of anything to be grateful about, a little gratitude goes a long way and can be found in the simplest or the humblest of circumstances. To begin with, your body is a remarkable, evolutionary-driven, biological and biochemical machine. There is no one else in the world who gets to experience your unique sensation, talents, needs, thoughts, opinions, and tastes of your individual body. Express gratitude and appreciation for your body. All parts of your body, even the perceived flaws, scars, and battle wounds, add to your uniqueness and perspectives that are yours alone to share with the world. Be grateful for the capacity of your lungs and the beating of your heart. Be grateful for your health, regardless of how it is measured. I am grateful for my body and the vehicle it provides for my journey through the wonder of reality and the experience of life. Having a sentiment of gratitude expands your awareness of ever more things to be grateful for in your life. All right, we're down to the last one. Be your own best friend, or be friendly with yourself. So establishing the attributes of love, respect, honesty, and forgiveness, trust, ownership, gratitude with yourself brings you full circle to being a true friend to yourself, the best kind of friend. You love yourself just as you are. You respect your individuality and free expression. You trust yourself in doing the best you can with what you have. Further, you own up to your decisions and actions, demonstrating integrity and honor. As your friend, you laugh with the funny stories you tell yourself and other commentary in your head. You also listen when you are hurting and are gentle and caring when down, sick, or struggling. You don't judge yourself and instead offer empathy and understanding. Forgiveness comes naturally and love flows freely. There is no one in the world who can be a more constant and available friend to yourself like you can. Even loneliness can be mitigated at times when you are like the person you are alone with. Your sentiments of gratitude for your body and self lift you and humble you for what you have experienced. Be your own best friend through the way you talk to yourself, listen to yourself, and otherwise take care of yourself. We're going to talk a little bit about boundaries, triggers, and emotional wounds. Our boundaries measure two things about ourselves, but they aren't necessarily related. First, they show or demonstrate our level of self-respect, and second, our unresolved emotional wounds. Self-respect stems from love and acknowledging that we are an individual worthy of equal treatment, and as such, we will not tolerate abuses or attempts of others manipulating or taking advantage of us. In other words, we love ourselves enough to seek relationships with others who also love and respect us and avoid relationships with those who continually to project their own lack of love and respect by attempting to control or hurt us. And then also our boundaries demonstrate our emotional wounds when those wounds are touched or triggered, which can happen intentionally or unintentionally through our own thoughts and actions or those of others. We can establish boundaries to avoid those wounds being trampled on and unnecessarily, but we can also use those boundaries or triggers to consciously work on healing those wounds. We heal them through recognizing that our thoughts that created the wound or the event that created that wound is no longer true, is no longer present in this moment, and then through forgiving ourselves and others, we restore unconditional love. We are then only left with the scar or memory of it, but no longer bound by the emotional hurt or trigger. Anybody that's capable of triggering one of your emotional wounds is also capable of teaching you and helping you to move on into a state of healing. As those emotional wounds fully heal, the protective boundary eventually becomes unnecessary and will no longer trigger an emotional response if crossed. We instead continue in self-love and respect, seeking and maintaining those relationships that are for our greatest good. Next slide. Another key understanding of ourselves is that our thoughts create emotions. What we think about can have a strong effect about how we feel or what we are feeling. That is, again, that's where the converting power of Mormonism comes from, because they give us these happy stories and impressionable images that generate happy thoughts for the most part, or warm fuzzies. Those warm fuzzies then get us thinking that, well, that might be true, and because that's the influence of the Spirit, and that's how the Holy Ghost feels, makes our leg tingle. And then we basically say, oh, well, that is true, and then we feel even better, and for long the missionaries have a greater influence over than you have over yourself. So when spelled out like that, it seems absurd that people can be so easily misled by stories that don't necessarily have any resemblance with unbiased reality. And leaving the church and becoming aware of this fact, of thoughts creating emotions, we regain power both over being misled by future encounters with emotional reasoning and also in choosing our thoughts carefully so as to avoid unnecessarily stirring emotions that could influence our behavior in undesirable ways. Now we're going to get into relationships with others. Restoring a healthy relationship with ourselves prepares us to reestablish healthier relationships with others. Since we can only really change ourselves and only have limited ability to influence change in others, our focus and concern is then assuring that we bring the best of ourselves into any relationship. While we cannot change others, changing ourselves does have a rather remarkable influence at inviting change in others, more so than if our focus was solely at directly changing others. There aren't any guarantees, however, but let's go into how bringing a healthy relationship with yourself provides the best opportunities for healthy relationships with others. Next slide. Okay, we're going to go back into the Mormon mindset here a little bit. When our own paradigm has shifted after discovering the real problems in Mormonism, we can easily forget the mindset that we just evolved from, and then we may run into difficulties depending on how we come out to how we come out of that doubt, closet of doubt to others, or try to share with others our disbelief or facts that we have discovered. The challenge is that Mormons hold their beliefs right there with their identities or as their identity. So anything that challenges their faith in the church then comes across as a personal attack, and up go their defenses. Mormons also identify with extended families forever, which becomes threatened merely by your own disaffection with the faith. These all combine to create a fragile environment for approaching loved ones about your leaving or about the challenges to the church's claims. Our strongest inclination after discovering the truth is often to share it with others, and it's not surprising since that's kind of what Mormonism ingrained in us. If you have the truth, you should share it and whatnot. And unfortunately, that doesn't go well when you're trying to do it the reverse way, because because that just goes through their filters and whatnot, and then their defenses are triggered, and they're just like, no, 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 and then they're like digging their heels in. It doesn't usually have the best outcome. Unless they actually show an open-mindedness to new information or other cracks in their own belief system, it's sharing too much too soon will only serve to hinder your relationship with others or even solidify their anchors in the church. Relationship with believers will usually become challenging if we maintain ulterior motives or efforts to directly challenge their faith. And for those relationships that you wish to maintain or restore, a more gentle, equitable approach is required. Healthy relationships are established upon similar or mutual attributes of respect, trust, honesty, and friendship. And while we can't guarantee what others bring those same attributes into the relationship, embodying them ourselves assures that at least our half of the relationship is established on that foundation. And that can often be enough to engender similar sentiment in others. However, the unfortunate possibility for some relationships is that the other party may never cease to be toxic in their lack of respect, honesty, or decent behavior. You may have to decide how much those people add or take away from your life, and then limit or cut off time spent with or around them. Fortunately, more often than not, others will make an effort to match what you bring into the relationship. Let's go into exploring some of those attributes of individuals who firmly ground themselves in a healthy relationship with themselves and why that is crucial in relationships with others. And decide for yourself if this sounds like an individual you would want to be around or emulate. So this is kind of a... Next slide. Kind of a monologue of what interacting with an individual who has more or less healed a bunch of their relationship with self comes across. Individuals who have restored a healthy relationship with their selves are often some of the most down-to-earth people you will meet. The self-respect they engender flows out and respects the life and free will of everyone they happen upon. Their love is unreserved and unconditional. Because they judge not their own self, they give little to no thought about how they are judged, freeing themselves from the world of manipulation and hurt. Insults and judgments generally roll off their backs. They recognize that those insults and judgments reflect the hurt and projections from others, from the originating person, and that those say more about them than anything about themselves. In other words, they don't take insults or judgments personally to be about them because they know it's really about what the source individual is feeling. They also don't allow others to continue to disrespect boundaries they maintain for themselves and politely make it known when others have touched or crossed those boundaries. Forgiveness also comes quickly, both to themselves and others, recognizing that they are freeing themselves from the emotional wound that holds them back from moving forward. They honor the individuality of others such that you can be your complete self around them. You can share any secret with these individuals, and they will neither cast judgment nor reveal your secrets to others. Because they look for and encourage the best in themselves, they also look for and encourage the best in others or in the best in you, but without any expectations or demands. You will only feel their encouragement to seek your own individual path and ambitions in life and interject none of their own. They will help you explore and consider all your options, looking at the risks and benefits, even if it is not a path they would choose for themselves. They are true to themselves and walk their talk the best they can, and in turn encourage you to be true to yourself. They recognize that their path is uniquely their own and that everyone has the right to choose and navigate the path of their choice. They own their past, and they recognize that it was the path that gave them the strength and experience to become who they are today. They apologize for their mistakes, and when those mistakes affect others, and they do their best to restore what was lost. They also allow you to own your feelings, actions, and decisions, recognizing that each of you only own your half of the relationship. Their patience comes from the wisdom that everything heals and happens in their own time frame. They are in no rush to get to tomorrow while still living and navigating the journey of today. Your boundaries are respected if known, and information you may be unprepared to process will also not be shared uninvited. They aren't without flaws, however, but in their journey through life, they try to minimize them and minimize the harm or hurt they have on others through their words, actions, or decisions. Does that sound like an individual you would want to be around or to hang out with? More importantly, does that sound like somebody you would like to emulate? Healing and restoring a healthy relationship with yourself is practically at the root of everything when it comes to healing and restoring your relationships with the world around you. This is the essence of becoming the change you want to see in the world, as Gandhi well understood. When you heal your relationship with yourself, you'll interact with your still-believing family and friends from that center through the filters of love, respect, forgiveness, honesty, trust, ownership, gratitude, and friendship. Because you love and accept yourself just as you are right now, you will also find it easier to love and accept your still-believing spouse, your family, friends, even as they are right now as their Mormon selves. You may not agree with their choice of religion, but your happiness is no longer held hostage to whether they leave religion with you. Your happiness instead stems from both your own healthy foundation and center of self-love and acceptance, and rejoices in happiness of others regardless of how they obtain it. When your nephew gets all excited for his baptism at 8 years old, you can find happiness in it because he is happy. You may not recognize You may recognize the road where the baptism will take your nephew, but you respect that it is his road to choose, along with his parents, and also his road to grow from. Thanks. Further, by creating a relationship and space of love and non-judgment with this nephew, you may just find yourself being the first person that nephew seeks out when he discovers he has same gender attraction and shares with you about his first kiss with another boy. He may worry you think he is gross, but that is just what his religion has taught him. But he will likely feel safe in telling you anyway, and when you reassure him he is not gross, he will feel a burden lift from his shoulders and have a sense that everything will be all right for him. From a healed relationship with self perspective, Your respect and ownership for yourself protects you from taking on the emotions and blame others may try to dump on you. Excuse me. Okay, kind of focus there. When you're still believing spouse tries to guilt you for destroying their eternal marriage, you can respond with compassion for the loss they feel, but also assertively from the perspective of not being responsible for what they feel, recognizing that their past programming by the church as causing that anguish and the responsibility being theirs to manage it. You can help reassure them, though, that you, by still loving them, and that you haven't changed as a fundamentally as a person, except becoming more open-minded and accepting. When you are sure in your relationship with yourself, you recognize that the hurts others may try to cause in you is a reflection of the very hurt, or very real hurt they are experiencing, and also that only they themselves can do something about how they feel in the end. Being compassionate and accepting of them, despite how nasty they may become towards you, provides a space where they are invited to heal and even own up to some of what they are experiencing. However, you will also protect yourself by distancing yourself as needed so as not to be dragged down or hurt by them unnecessarily. The relationship itself becomes the focus and priority when approached from the perspective of your own healed relationship. If the relationship is worth preserving, the boundaries and free will of others, of the other party, will be respected and so create a safe place for them around you. We don't get to choose the boundaries other people establish for themselves, nor do we choose what information will or won't be sensitive to them. The boundaries of others aren't known, with a little awareness we can detect when they have been crossed. Defensiveness, dismissal, denial, rising emotions, tensions, shutting down, or walking away all display some level of discomfort of a boundary being crossed or an emotional wound being opened. It's of little use to keep pushing the topic once it's triggering another's defenses. Plus, you'll increase the risk of harming the relationship. On the other hand, if they feel safe around you, they will be themselves and talk about their lives in the church as though you were still one of them. This does not need to be met and discussed by yourself when you recognize that this is the life they choose and value. However, when you have them over in your home and your zone, you can also establish how you would want them to respect you there. We're going to go in. What time have we got? So, thoughts on deconversion. I'm going to try to rush through this because I know this is probably a topic that's interesting or desirable. We would all like our families to join us, I'm sure. I am the only one of my 9 siblings to be out of the church. My youngest brother is on a mission and comes home next month. And it's amazing the mind job they've done to him in his emails. So as I've said before, we can often have backfiring results when we first try to go about bringing our family out by the basically showing them the most challenging information without any sort of preparation. And that, of course, triggers Mormons in their defenses because their identity is right there and they feel like you're personally attacking them, even if those facts have nothing to do with them. We also forget that, or can forget that Mormons use emotional reasoning, and no amount of facts or observable evidence is going to challenge that for the most part. Only if they are already doubting or looking for answers does that approach really work. If they are not open or doubting, pursuing that approach will certainly hurt your relationship, if not end them altogether, which I see often on Facebook and on some of the boards. So when you're on the path of becoming a self-loving, self-accepting, and self-respecting individual, you present the best of yourself and carry with you the knowledge and experience about personal identity that can help others awaken to their own self-worth. Yeah, we're on the right slide. By showing and teaching unconditional love, respect, and acceptance through example or through open invitation, you can bypass the filters that keep out identity-challenging Mormon facts and appealing straight to their core identity. If you can cause a shift in their perception of themselves, in their core identity, engendering self-love, acceptance, forgiveness, and respect, their filters will also begin to erode. Well, let's go to the next slide. I think. So back to this slide again. Does that laser pointer ever get working? So instead of trying to go through the filters in the middle there, you're going to try and help them see themselves the same way you see them, which is unconditionally loving and accepting of them. And also help them understand how others can disrespect them, how the church disrespects them, or how their spouse may disrespect them, or how society in generally can also not really show love or show love and acceptance properly. Eventually, this may allow them to feel safe enough to come to you when their own doubts become loud enough. It may also cause them to question the church's foundation or that the church itself does not have those principles well established. And you can see in general conference talks, I think it was a couple years ago, Oaks or Pack or one of those two was saying how it's okay to be like conditionally loving. I mean, outright saying it's okay that the Lord teaches conditional loving. I couldn't believe that, but it's right there. They say it's okay to withdraw your love or your support, and that's what they kind of do. Only if they show interest, again, do you go and give them the Mormon think-clink, or you can give it to them, and then they can go on their own time. But for the most part, if you can start getting them to see themselves from the self-loving and respecting position that you can see yourself, then you will help them to open up to that truth about themselves. Just going to share one quick story demonstrating how you can essentially blast right through past the filters by appealing straight to their core identity or causing a core identity shift. The past several months, I've been involved with the bishop's family in another state. All communications been over text, email, or chat. This bishop's family, he has a daughter that was bisexual and was in a relationship with a lesbian at the time when I met them, and she was struggling to love and accept herself. And in getting involved with the bishop to try and help him accept his daughter more, he was turned out to be one of the most stubborn uber Mormons I've ever come across. His kids weren't allowed to play video games. I mean, they didn't allow their kids to do anything. They had to copy scriptures down out of the Book of Mormon if they were in trouble, or they would have to read twice a day, all sorts of stuff. Anyways, I could not get this bishop at that time to accept his daughter. And she did get close to suicide at least a couple of times. In fact, she's in a rehab center right now. More on that later. So, a couple of weeks ago, or I would say in September, I started, the same bisexual daughter had me start tutoring her 15-year-old brother, because he had a lot of behavior problems at school and with teachers and also in his studies. After friending this 15-year-old brother for a few weeks, he told me he had kissed a boy, and he asked me if I thought he was gross. He had never told anybody that. And it was actually just the week before that he had actually kissed this boy. But he came to me first because I'd always demonstrated just openness and acceptance of him, despite how everybody else, his teacher and his parents, told him how bad he was for his behavior and how stupid he was because he was behind in all of his schooling. After I told him I didn't think he was gross, he felt like so much better and he became himself again. The next day, he had me help him come out to his mom. I probed her first, just kind of seen where she was at with the LGBT issue, and she did respond positively. So then he asked me to email her and say that tell her that he was gay because he was too scared. And so I did so, and she read my email and then went to his room, gave him a hug, and told him that he still loved her. Or she still loved him, sorry. Took him out to lunch that day and reconnected with her son for perhaps the first time in his adolescence. She told me later that day that she was ready to leave the church and her husband over that. One day to the next, her core identity shifted because her son identified as being gay. The next day, she wanted me to help her tell her husband. I probed him. I emailed him back and forth throughout the whole day trying to see if he had any cracks in that issue, and he did not. He was not going to accept his son. He was not going to accept his bisexual daughter. So I told that to the mom. She said, okay then, we'll tell him tonight, and I will leave him if I need to. The last email I sent to him that day, the dad, was, your world is about to crumble, and I hope you will think before you respond. He replied that night, says, damn, you were right. His wife and his kid left him alone for that weekend. The boy went to his boyfriend's house, and the mom went to a friend's to stay, so that he could think about what he was really valuing, wanting in life. That night he had a beer. The next night he had more beers. He skipped church that Sunday. He took his family out to eat and had beer in front of them the next week. And then he listened to General Conference the following weekend, only the Sunday sessions, because he took his son golfing with his boyfriend. And he became verbally upset at many of the talks. This is a guy that less than a week and a half before, you could not have ever seen him leaving. His core identity shift because his wife shocked his identity by threatening to, by both leaving the church and threatening to leave him. I'm not saying that's appropriate or the best way, and it's probably exception more than rule. But it does demonstrate that if you can cause a shift in their internal core identity, or get through to them without triggering their filters and defenses, you can get people to leave the church. He has since stepped down from the bishopric, and their family is still recovering from Mormonism, though. That's going to be an evolving story, I'm sure. Let's go to the last slide, and I'll conclude, and then we can do some questions. So the window that we see the world is created through our identity with and relationship with self. We project on others and see and what we see and feel about ourselves. To create the best relationship opportunities with others, we first begin to have a healthy relationship with ourselves. As we restore healthy relationship with ourselves, we begin to heal our emotional wounds, to create a self-loving and accepting identity of ourselves, and then be able to see the world through new lenses and take a much healthier self into our relationship with everyone we interact with. You will further allow others to feel safe around you and open up and be their own selves. The most important relationship you will ever have is the one you have with yourself. Having a conscious, loving relationship with yourself, being aware of your thoughts, and how they affect your emotions, identity, and interactions with the outside reality is the enlightened self-mastery state that the avatars of history have touched upon. Awareness of your relationship with self enhances free will and allows you to choose your own reactions instead of acting out of subconscious past programming. There is no greater freedom than mastery of self. In the name of cheese and rice, ramen.